All right, we're going to jump into an episode that makes The Truman Show look amateur, all because John Calvin argued that God is the ultimate director, scripting every line and choreographing every movement in existence. Welcome to MarsCast, a podcast from Mid-America Reform Seminary, where our faculty members address all things theological and cultural from a Reformed lens. I'm your host, Jared Luchibor. In today's episode, Dr. Beach explores John Calvin's teachings on divine providence, the doctrine that God actively governs and sustains all of creation, not as a detached creator, but through his continual power and wisdom. He discusses how Calvin argued that even seemingly random or insignificant events are part of God's overarching purpose. His providence extends to the decisions and actions of human beings, guiding them to fulfill his decrees while still holding them accountable for sin. Though we don't always understand God's ways, Calvin saw providence as a comfort amid life's troubles and a call to reverent submission.
With chapter 16 of book 1 of the Institutes, Calvin arrives at what you might more simply call the doctrine of providence. The chapter heading he gives, God by his power nourishes and maintains the world created by him and rules its several parts by his providence. I must say, Calvin's doctrine of providence is one of the richest, most pastoral, in many ways, sobering, edifying, helpful expositions of this doctrine. I think you can read among probably any theologians, past and present, that's my opinion. Calvin's very concerned that we see that the doctrine of providence is really an extension of the doctrine of creation. What's very clear for Calvin, and it ought to be for us, is that creation is not a wind-up clock or a watch that runs on batteries and it just goes and proceeds being created and God need not care about it. In fact, everything is upheld by God's word of power, his divine, ever-active presence and activity to uphold and to provide, to guide, and to govern all that is. And so Calvin is very concerned that we take note and understand God as a providential God. And again, this is against all sorts of idolatrous notions of God, either a deistic God who, again, this wind up the clock and then let it run on its own, and God can be inattentive and inactive. None of that. God is active in his providence. He's not an aloof God, coldly distant, unavailable, quite the opposite. He's not a momentary creator, but an ever-active provider. And he's never distant from the world. He's ever active in sustaining, guiding, leading, an energy divinely bestowed always. So our God is up close and personal. He sustains, nurtures, cares for everything he's made, even to the least sparrow and even that which is smaller and seeming less important than a sparrow. Calvin tells us that providence entails God's own active nurturing, governing, sustaining. It's comprehensive. It's detailed. So it's broad picture, very small picture, even under a microscope, we might say. Now, he sets all this against the idea of chance. Providence warns us away from all notions of fortune, chance, superstition, superstitions like astrology or the fate of cards or dice. No. When you believe in fate or chance, this beclouds, even buries providence. And then you start looking at your life independent of God as if he's not present, he's not near, and he's not in control and guiding things. And then burdens and disappointments in your life You throw up your hands as if you're fated or something of that nature. Calvin is very clear, nothing of the sort. Even burdens and disappointments in our lives are under and directed by God's providence. And Calvin's not naive about this. You know, a man can fall among thieves or get shipwrecked at sea or killed by a falling tree, all kinds of what we might call a happenstance, a mishap. By the same token, people miraculously escape death by a hair's breadth. And, of course, cardinal reason, Calvin says, when we see these kinds of things, oh, it was fortune, it was a chance, it was good luck. But Calvin says, no, Christ teaches us that the very hairs of our head are numbered and that no such luck, if you will, actually transpires. Things are always under God's providential care. We see it in the ordinary things like changing of seasons. We understand that God is watchful, he's active, he's attentive, and nothing takes place without his wisdom and purpose. And once again, he returns to that, yes, in times of adversity, believers comfort themselves with the solace that they suffer nothing except by God's ordinance and command. It's not a happenstance. It's not fate or fortune. God has ample enough supply of his omnipotent power to guide and lead all things to his good purpose. And he has a good purpose for his people, even when they face troubles. Now, he takes on numerous errors relative to providence. So he takes it down a number of them. Providence isn't mere foreknowledge, as some have said. You know, he's just looking ahead and he's not governing anything. He's just able to see into the future. No, God is actively guiding things into a future. Neither is providence to be thought of as a general kind of oversight, but there has no specificity to it. So it's a broad range thing, but doesn't capture the details. No, that would never work. He also rejects the error that free choice of human beings, for example, cannot be providentially governed. Calvin argues the contrary. He likewise rejects the error of the Epicureans, you know, eat, drink, be merry, tomorrow we die, because everything is fated nonetheless. No, that turns God into an inert being, slothful, inattentive. He calls it patent madness to believe that. He disputes as well a certain conception of a universal or general providence, which states that while God does not direct everything according to his wisdom and purpose, he does exercise some kind of blind and ambiguous motion, sort of like keeping enough water in the tub, but what happens in the tub isn't really God's concern. None of those things. We have to see that God is the one who is attentive and attending to the regulation of individual events and all the affairs. Everything proceeds from his set plan, nothing by chance. So divine decree, the eternal divine decree of God, providence is the working out, God's active power at work in bringing the divine decree to its expression and fulfillment. So governance, preservation, but also concurrence. He doesn't spend a lot of time on the ingredient of concurrence in divine providence. But he makes clear that God is universally active in all things such that they're sustained and derive their energy to do anything at all. Concurrence tells us that God is also active in the activities of his creatures or even in the laws of gravity, the physical laws of the universe. Those don't run on batteries either. They need God's co-activity. It's therefore mistaken to think, says Calvin, that God only directs ordinary affairs and not extraordinary affairs or just the cyclical things of life, day and night and the seasons, but again, not the details. None of this is correct. God's fatherly favor, his judgments come to expression precisely not only in the general affairs of life, but the integral and small detailed things. And this takes us that providence is God's care for us. All people are under his direction. Nothing is fortuitous. The day we die has been ordained. And even where people resort to chance events, the casting of lots, that kind of thing, that too is determined by God under his decree, his secret plan, and his providential will. So whether it's wind or wave or a mosquito that bites you, what have you, it's in God's care. We see this expressed in Jacob's life, in Joseph's life, in a most magnificent way. We see it in Jonah, and perhaps exhibit front and center is Job and the affairs that took place to him. Calvin rejects the notion of fate. Providence isn't fate. Stoic fatalism is not a Christian doctrine, which holds to blind chance and fortune. There's no God behind the human affairs. We're not fated by when we were born and the arrangement of stars and the sky and the like. No, things are under God's care. At the same time, Calvin isn't a stickler. He allows us to continue to use terms like haply, perchance, perhaps, fortuitously, you know. Of course, we understand those things within God's providential care. It's this manners of speaking, and we don't have to get fixated on that. But by the same token, and even in using those terms, we understand really, of course, God, I'm in God's hands under his care and direction. So he wants to abandon the notion that there is real chance or anything's random. Though things might appear fortuitous to us, we know otherwise. He turns from there in a chapter in which he entitles How We May Apply This Doctrine to Our Greatest Benefit. And here he explores the practical implications of the doctrine of providence. And one of the first things he shows us, it ought to teach us patience. Because life does have its bangs and bumps and bruises and hurts and wounds and things that bring us down and low. And providence should teach us patience, he says. It should correct us in our wickedness and our affections for wickedness. It should tame our lust. And we should be subjugated under the knowledge that God is the Lord of the universe, bringing things to his good purpose. And we ought to get on board with that rather than grouse about it or press against it or simply sleepwalk through life as a kind of sluggishness. And boy, don't we see that today with many people. No desires, no goals, just sort of existing. We're not pursuing. Calvin, as part of the practical benefits of this doctrine, would warn us away from trying to cross-examine God and God's ways. Doesn't that happen? Bad things happen. God is providential God. Why does he let this happen? Why this providence of God? Well, that was the book of Job. Why this providence of God? And of course, you can read that book and find the divine answer, which Calvin embraces. He, in this regard, again, turns to errors, a distortion of this doctrine. People abuse and twist this doctrine out of shape. For example, a profane person will say, well, if everything's under his providence, then prudence is a waste of time. I don't need to buckle my seatbelt. Prayers are a waste of time. Devising plans, planning ahead, making provision for the future, these are all superfluous. Similarly, everything that transpires since it's under God's decree and according to his providence, these things are actually doing God's will. So if an assassin murders an upstanding citizen, the killer did God's will. You know, people think like that. Or a woman commits adultery. Well, that was she carried out God's plan. Or a thief robs someone of house and home and whatever. Well, God's providence. This actually happened to me once. My sister backed into my car with her car, smashed my back fender radically, comes back into the house. Oh, sorry, I smashed up your car. You know, of course, I wasn't too happy. And she said to me nonchalantly, well, it's God's providence. You know, that doesn't go down well. Understanding of providence certainly understood that, but it doesn't lead people to be off the hook for their negligence, for their foolishness, for their wicked acts they do, or the mishaps. It wasn't a deliberate, but it was negligent. It wasn't careful in backing out of the driveway. So our duty, says Calvin, is clear. Providence includes using means, planning ahead, thinking, using our minds. He's provided helps. So providence calls us to use the helps so that we're not starving in the future. We do have warmth for the winter. We do have drink as we travel through the desert. That's planning ahead and the like, and many like things. Medicine to be used as remedy for a disease. Calvin would have nothing to do with modern notions of, I believe in God, I trust in miracles, I believe in providence, and if God wants me to get well, I'll get well without medicine. Or if God doesn't want me to die in a car wreck, then, you know, or does, whether I use a seatbelt or not, doesn't matter. I'm under his providence. Yeah, under his providence, so buckle your seatbelt, okay? That would be Calvin's view. So God provides us the ability to make way for the future, to prepare, to be careful in how we use things. So how ought we to use this providence, this doctrine of providence? Well, we should meditate upon it, just like he would have us meditate upon creation. And so the maintenance and guidance and governance of creation, he would have us meditate upon that. Calvin would bid us, if he lived today, I suppose, turn off your devices, your television, and everything else, and you should meditate upon God and who he is, what he does, of course, redemptively too, but here we're on creation and providence. And this will help us wean, his word, wean ourselves from a life of worry. And many of us are perpetual worriers, or we're grumpy at the challenges God sends our way without, in quiet meditation, what is God teaching me? Maybe he's more than happy to answer my prayer for relief, but he also wants me first to learn to trust him, to depend upon him, to accept difficulty and suffering. Christ did, and his servants did. Maybe we need to do the same. So Calvin would bid us to humility. And the life of Job, again, he turns to that, teaches us this over and again, over and again. He knows life is full of all sorts of hazards. You know, in his day, you get on a horse, it can easily slip, stumble, and you're dead. A tile falls off the roof, you're dead. You get some little disease, a sniffle, you're dead. You start to sweat for no reason, or you feel cold for no reason, you might well soon be dead. He knows that fields and farms and animals easily get diseased, or they suffer frost or drought or blight, what have you, and now you're starving. Calvin knows that life can be tough, all the more to find that we dwell under God's safekeeping and his fatherly care. Finally, in talking about this, Calvin takes us to other uses. God so uses the works of the ungodly, so bends their minds to carry out his judgments, that he remains pure from every stain. So he's returning to this thing. It's under God's decree. It's under God's eternal will, yet that eternal will of God includes evil things that finally transpires, which are opposed to God's revealed will. So here, he says, isn't that a problem? Isn't that a conundrum? And don't people raise objections, a very key objections, that God seems to have two contrary wills, a decretive will that allows evil things and a revealed will that says these things are wrong and are forbidden by God and unwanted by him. Well, Calvin admits that we face this problem, but the problem is in the puniness of our mind and our inability to grasp the full length and depth and eternal secret purpose of things. He points to Christ's crucifixion as eternally willed of God, and yet the highest crime, if you will, against a person, the Holy Son of God. This doesn't put God at will with himself, but it puts us in a position to acknowledge our mental incapacity, that we're not capable of digging in to solve these kinds of deeper, heavier type subjects. And again, it calls us to submission, calls us to faith, calls us to trust God. Trust is justice. Trust is goodness. Trust that he knows more than we do. Another way this question emerges, it's objected that humans can't be culpable for their sinful actions inasmuch it was decreed according to God's will. You know, the woman who commits adultery, and that's adultery. It's breaking of a commandment, but she did God's will. No, they confuse God's decree and precept. Calvin points us to Absalom, for example, who commits adultery with his father's wives, violating God's command, his moral law, and yet he fulfills God's decree to punish David's adultery with this shameful act. We should therefore hold tight to this truth, says Calvin. While God accomplishes through the wicked what he's decreed by his secret judgment, sinful people are not excusable as if they had obeyed his precept, which is out of their own lust and they deliberately break. That is, look, sinners act out of their wicked motives wickedly. God uses sinful acts of sinful sinners and their evil motivations to fulfill, either to punish or to finally bless and bring about states of affairs that are unto kingdom come. There's sort of the short answer. So with all of this, Calvin has finished and closed out his teaching on knowledge of God, our Creator. The Creator God is the providential God. He's the loving Lord of his people who sees them through every trouble.
Next time on MarsCast, Reverend Paul Ipema takes us through a series on the importance of catechism preaching. This is going to be a very important trilogy of episodes to tune into, especially if you or someone you know is planning to become a pastor in the United Reformed Churches in North America. If you enjoyed this episode of MarsCast, please consider subscribing and telling others who may be interested. Also, consider leaving a review. Your thoughts would be greatly appreciated, as they'll help us enhance our content further. Your support allows us to produce engaging content and to build a thoughtful community of lifelong learners and practitioners. I'm Jared Luchabor, signing off for now. See you in the next episode of MarsCast.